Welcome to Back at the Track, a retrospective race review and preview special presentation of 1230 WSOO. Today would have been the historic annual running of the I-500 snowmobile race. Since that simply isn't possible in 2021, we'd like to thank you for joining us for special features and conversations with I-500 racers and historians. Back to the Track is brought to you by Anytime Towing, Central Savings Bank, Madigan Pingator Insurance, Northern Light Cannabis, Reed Metals, and by Skinners of Pickford. Now let's join our host, Mark Sinangelo, back at the track.
And we are back at the I-500 track, Mark Sinangelo, along with Steve Brosco and Scott Macyegg. And I want to mention our sponsors of our broadcast today, Madigan Pingator Insurance, Northern Light Cannabis Company, Anytime Towing, Reed Metals, Skinners of Pickford, and Central Savings Bank, helping us bring today's broadcast to you. And we're joined by Amanda Kemp, who, of course, is in charge of the I-500 Queen competition and the Princess competition and stuff like that. I don't exactly what it's called, but you do the you know, we have the lovely ladies here joining us. So thanks for coming up.
No, thanks for having us.
So obviously one of the big events of the I-500 every year is the I-500 Princess competition. Were you able to do anything this year? Obviously you were, because we have girls here. So.
What we ended up doing was anybody who competed in our 2020 program, mm-hmm. we extended out their title until 2022.
Okay.
Meaning that they get to remain queen or princess for an extra year without having to pay another reg fee or mm-hmm. participate again, because we couldn't do it live. I mean, I'm sure there was ways we could have swung it, but there's no race.
Sure. Right.
And with no race, that means no sponsors, and these pageants are not cheap.
Sure.
We're not a large televised pageant, and I don't like the idea of excluding anyone, mm-hmm. And that includes people that may have a financial difficulty. So
sure.
I mm-hmm. bend over backwards all year long to secure enough sponsorship to make sure that the reg fees are very affordable.
And you get people that are from out of town, and actually you get Canadians that participate in this too, who wouldn't be able to come over this
year.
That
was another determining factor to us not wanting to hold an actual pageant this year. Mm-hmm. I have several in the Princess program, our little kids across the bridge. I can't sit here and preach that nobody gets left out.
Right.
And then hold a pageant where our Canadian participants can't come over and compete. Mm-hmm. It's just not fair.
So tell us who's here. You want to introduce or have each of the girls say something here? Or?
Yeah, we'll start. Stephanie Bishop. She is one of our 2020 princesses. Mm-hmm. You are a junior now at Brimley, right? Yeah. Go ahead and say hi.
Hi, my name is Stephanie.
Okay. Stephanie, I will say, in the height of the COVID shutdowns, when she was feeling bad about not having any community service to do because, you know, events were all being canceled,
right.
she turned around and cut off all of her hair and donated it to children that needed wigs for cancer. Mm-hmm. So, and next to her is the now Mrs. Samantha Pomeroy, Stephanie's sister, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Now nobody will know their sisters because she changed her last name. She actually got engaged on pageant night, and all the little munchkins immediately wanted a big princess bridal shower for
mm-hmm.
her. And
right.
we ended up over the course of the summer, when the restrictions were lighter, we were able to do an outdoor one for her. So that was pretty much the only time we were able to get the munchkins together last summer, but they
right.
enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to tell us a little bit about what you've got going on?
I guess right now the only thing I really have going on volunteer-wise for the pageant is making hats for the hospital for cancer kids.
Yeah, she's learned how to. She was actually quarantined due to an exposure, and she's fine. She didn't get sick,
mm-hmm.
which is a blessing. But she used her time to learn how to knit hats, and she's making them for St. Jude because the children there need something to keep their heads warm when they lose their hair to chemo.
Awesome. Very good.
So, and next to her, Princess Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
And Taylor, are you a senior this year at Lake State?
Sort of like a super senior, they call it.
Heck yeah.
Super senior.
Yeah. I'm double majoring, so I'll be there probably for another 2 years, but that's okay.
Now, cool. Tell us about the fundraiser you just did for the hospice house.
So the fundraiser I did, the hospice house, collaborated, I guess, with Alpine Chocolate House, and we did a fundraiser selling different treats that they sell there, and I was able to raise over $100 just myself.
Perfect. Awesome.
That is awesome. And we're so proud of your efforts, all three of you girls, really. Now, last year, for those of you that weren't at our live pageant, you missed the big surprise that was unveiled. Mm-hmm. Over the course of almost a decade, I had accumulated some really awesome queens and princesses that went above and beyond, and they continued to serve the I-500 and the community at large well past their reign. Mm-hmm. So we created a lifetime queen court, and they are now queens that their title will never expire, and they all have a position within the pageant committee now. So I'll introduce Heather Gordier, who is our Princess Program co-director. So she's helping me with all of the children ages 4 through 11 that compete. And Heather, why don't you tell us about some of the incentive programs we have for them to get out and do community service?
Yeah, since the whole quarantine and everything, it's been hard for our, especially our littler girls, to get out into their communities and just help out. So we've been trying to put in place different programs and stuff for them. And our current one, we're doing a monthly title, kind of, and each month the girl with like the most community service and stuff will get a title, and it's just kind of to encourage them and stuff. And this month their challenge is to write a letter to either a retirement home or like lost the other word, but yeah,
they're filling out some of them chose to fill out Valentine cards because they can't write beyond signing their name yet, which is fine. And Heather's being amazing at getting these girls. The big thing with Miss I-500 is we want the pageant to support the volunteer aspect of the race. We have over 100 volunteers that come together, and they put on this huge event 1 week out of the year. So when I came on board 10 years ago with this program, it was, how do I take that energy and harness it and have these young ladies keep that momentum going throughout the community for the other 51 weeks of the year? So, and Heather's been really instrumental with that. Allison, Miss Allison Gordon, I almost called you Allison Raider. Some of you guys get married and then I forget not to call you by your maiden name. Allison has been, actually, she was crowned assistant director, co-assistant director with Danielle McCluskey. And they've been able to help me just kind of pick up the slack if I can't be there or do something. It's great to be able to fall back on somebody. Billy always says, you could be hit by a bus race week. Who's going to take over? That's going to be Allison and Danielle. So hopefully I don't get hit by a bus anytime soon because due to COVID, I haven't been.
Not that you couldn't do a good job.
We want to do that.
Due to COVID, I haven't been able to get together with them and teach them as much as I'd like. But we're working on it. And she's been, actually, she went back to school. So why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, I actually went back to school in last January, and I went to school for massage therapy, and I'm getting ready to take my boards soon.
Awesome. Very good. So, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
And last but not least, we have Miss Zoe Hall.
Hi.
And Zoe, she unfortunately, her title is the alumna chair, and she's supposed to be coordinating all of the other past queens and princesses and having events with them. But of course, with COVID, her thing has been kind of sidelined. So she's been helping Heather kind of pick up the slack.
Oh, yeah.
And tell us a little bit about you. She's a hard worker. She just bought herself a gorgeous new truck.
Oh, yeah. Love it. I mostly just go to college and work. Sadly, there's sense of COVID, we're not allowed to go to any events. And sadly, the I-500 obviously isn't happening this year, but I really can't wait until next year. What race is it going to be? The 53rd race and the 10th anniversary of our pageant. And I'm so excited to help Amanda and the girls set up an awesome pageant to show off our 10-year anniversary. And I can't wait for Relay for Life for us to represent then and next year at the race. It's going to be really exciting, but just kind of waiting for everything, all the hectic to die down and get back together with the girls, plan something new and big.
Absolutely, Zoe. And we just love your energy. And that's why I couldn't let you go. And that's kind of my thing with giving them these lifetime titles is they worked so hard as queens and princesses that I didn't want to let them go. And
well, you got a lot of the enthusiasm.
So I bribe them.
There's nothing going on in their hair. You know?
I bribe them with the fancy crown to keep them. Now they're on the committee and they think they got this awesome title in here. I just euchered them into taking on a job.
That's all right.
But, you know, we're just looking forward. We're plowing through and, you know, like talking to Heather with her princess program thing, we're trying to use this opportunity to say, okay, what did you do with your COVID year? We had a year off from the parades and dressing up with a tiara on and waving pretty. What did you do from home when nobody was looking? What did you do to help the community when it wasn't flashy and and a big attention-getting event? So I really think that...
Which is probably more important than what you do the other time.
It is, it is super important to me. Little-known fact about Miss I-500, the highest chunk of your score for the Miss Division, the 16 to 21-year-olds, who are, of course, all eligible for scholarships, so that's the division to be in. All the other divisions, the junior Miss and the preteen, that's just practice for the big girls.
For sure.
And our biggest chunk of our score comes from the community service aspect and their resume. And then they go into an interview, which is like a job interview. So I'll have people after the fact that'll come up to me in the casino as we're cleaning up from the pageant saying, well, I don't know how so-and-so didn't win. She had the best evening gown. Or I don't know how so-and-so didn't win because, you know, she seemed to be the prettiest with the best hair, and that's not even anywhere on our score sheet.
For sure.
Well, you know, we're looking the stage. Once you get to the stage portion, what you see is just a show. That's just something to absorb time before we put crowns on heads, because nobody wants the girls to just walk out of an interview room and be like, okay, here's who the winners are. You want to see something.
Sure.
So that's what's, you know, mostly important. And I've had past queens that have used that pageant resume and turn around and got full rides to MSU. So it's a very important thing that we start building their resumes at the age of 12, and we provide as many opportunities as we can for them to put quality things. You know, if you're still too young to get a job, work for free. You know, and those are the things that we promote, because if it wasn't for people that are willing to either put themselves on voluntary layoff, use up all of their vacation time, retired people coming out of retirement and busting their high knees here. I mean, seriously, who wants to stand for 9 hours in the freezing cold and watch snowmobiles turn left?
Right.
It's a special type of heart that you need to be a part of this organization, and these girls need to reflect that.
Absolutely. Well, and you guys all are a reflection of this gal here who's got the most energy of anybody I know. So congratulations to all of you, and you guys represent this event and this community so well. And Amanda, again, you do yeoman's work. It was amazing the stuff that you do, and I'm just glad to know that you and call you a friend, and glad to have you come up here and be a part of this special broadcast, and we'll look forward to seeing you soon once we don't have to wear masks and we can do all the other fun stuff, like you said, Relay for Life and all the other good stuff. So
absolutely.
Thanks so much.
No, anytime. Thank you.
Amanda Kemp joining us here on the big broadcast. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to be talking to former winner John Wick coming up next here on our broadcast on 1230 WSOO.
Anytime towing, how may I help you?
Hi, I'm in the ditch and I need help.
It's cold in here, Mom.
Okay, ma'am, can I get your location? I'll send someone your way ASAP.
Thanks. Please hurry.
Anytime Towing, servicing Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan and surrounding areas. They guarantee the lowest prices and are the only fully licensed and family-owned towing company in Sault, Michigan. For 24-hour roadside assistance that includes lockouts and jump starts, call Anytime Towing today, 906-635-1560.
What are the two things most teens should have besides a cell phone? A teen savings account and a teen checking account at Central Savings Bank. Your teen can learn how to save and budget their own money with one or both of these accounts. These accounts come with an ATM debit card with mobile wallet capabilities and access to things like internet banking and mobile banking, all with no monthly service charges. If you have a child 12 years of age or younger, they have accounts for them as well. Stop in any of their 9 locations and ask about the CSB Savers Youth Savings Club accounts. Member FDIC.
What's that?
It's the noise Liam's piggy bank makes when he puts money in it. He has a CSB Savers Youth Savings Club account at Central Savings Bank.
Oh, yeah? I don't have any accounts for either of my boys.
Well, with this type of savings account, Liam gets prizes for deposits, entries for quarterly drawings, and much more. Plus, there are no monthly service charges.
Member FDIC.
Central Savings Bank. Ask what we can do for you.
Now let's go back to the track on 1230 WSOO.
We are back here at the track. Marks and Angelo, along with Steve Brosco and Scott Maciag. I want to thank Amanda Kemp and the I-500 Queens and Princesses for joining us here from the Miss I-500 pageant. Now we're on the phone with winner of the 1988, 92, 93, and 95 race, John Wick. John, good morning to you, sir. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, you guys. It's great to hear your voices and great to be a part of this deal, a small part, you know. It's really cool you guys are doing this.
Well, we're enjoying it, too. Been having some great memories and everything. And I know, obviously, with you, a four-time winner here at the track, lots of great stories and memories from the I-500 track.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you, you know, race morning like it is right now, I got butterflies sitting here. You just don't get rid of that.
Well, John, if you could see the track right now, it would be the track that you would love. It's probably 2 feet deep.
Yep.
Never been plowed. Snow or cross country city out there right now. It's really strange looking at it, John. It's just pure snow, no tracks, no fans, no anything.
Somebody had put a picture out on Facebook of the track, how it looked, you know, a couple days ago. Yeah, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's so different. John, you were here for, I think, 15 or 16 years. Correct me if I'm wrong, somewhere in that range.
13 years.
You started out with the snow pros. You were racing. We were talking to Dwayne Bauer a little about what a snow pro is. And you always ran a fairly stock style snowmobile. Can you tell me why you thought you had an advantage and, of course, then ultimately why you did have the advantage over the fast snow pros?
Well, the one thing that we did, we pretty much counted on the track getting rough. So on years where the track maybe didn't get as rough, we maybe didn't do as good, you know. But boy, if we could get a rough track, we set our skis up with, or our sled up with the long skis.
Mm-hmm.
When we started, most everyone had just a little short oval racing skis on, you know. And boy, I'll tell you what, I think that really helped me as a driver to keep control of the snowmobile, especially when it started getting rougher, you know.
Sure, and we've seen it. And, of course, for those of you who aren't aware out there, the I-500, you usually have more than one driver. You came in for a break, you do a pit stop, the other driver goes out and runs 100 miles or so. And John Wick ran every race totally solo, all by himself, the only winner to ever do it, and he did it four times. And, John, just an amazing feat that you did that. I did some number crunching on your average finishes here. And if you took out your first year and your last year, your average finishes through there, all those years, 1986 through 1996, your average finish was 2.2. That's just an amazing run there. Your average place was second, you know, 2.2. Just an amazing run. We were talking to George Sherrard earlier about the 89 race. I think it was the 89 race. Anyways, I'm assuming you thought you had the field covered, probably a 15-mile lead cruising into the later portion of the race. Can you tell us what happened that year that prevented you from having that win in 89?
Yeah, sure. You know, we ran our same sled from the year before, the 88, that we did win with, you know. And, boy, we didn't think, you know, at that time we were only into our fourth year then or whatever there, and we thought, boy, I think we should just go back, you know, with that same snowmobile. Well, that kind of haunted us because the center frog that holds the radius rods on the independent front suspension, that came apart on us, and it just slowly got worse toward the end of the race. And actually, one of the one side pulled, the right side, I believe, just pulled right off, and so I basically trying to go on one ski for a little bit, and that didn't work out. So.
Well, as that race progressed, I remember standing right there when we had to black flag you because of the condition of your sled. Black flag is when we throw out the flag and say, you come into the pits now and fix it or go home, basically. You came in and you parked your sled for the rest of the day somewhere in the last 20 to 30 laps of that race, and you ultimately finished second place in the pits for the last 20 minutes of the race, about 15 seconds ahead of third place finisher Mike Stasak. Am I correct in saying it that way?
That's absolutely correct, and we just by the skin of our nose. So.
That was, you know.
Yeah, we were tickled to get a second, trust me.
Yeah, you know, not going on all your talking about all your wins, but some of your second place, you know, your other runs were amazing. They were all amazing runs. But that I remember, I think you might have been black flagged twice in that race and trying to fix it and get back going again. John, we're looking back.
I want to talk about those second place runs, you know, because they are great, you know. The 87 race, we took second to Mike Stazak and Jeff Kickmiller. And I'll tell you what, those guys, they were on their program. And for 1987 to come and finish second at that, our team was really, really excited about that. And then, like you said, 1989, George Sherrard, man, what a great winner. You know, we love the guy. He's the most humble racer that I know, probably, you know. And we didn't mind finishing second. Well, then we jumped to 94 and Ivan Hansen and Rob Sapp, the winners. Well, I don't know if you remember 1994, but I think Ivan Hansen and Rob Sapp won every race there was anywhere. You know, he might even went out and raced snowcross that year and won some. I'm not sure.
They won the Meyer Point Championship, too, that year.
And they won the Triple Crown that year, too.
Triple Crown, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so to finish, you know, second to Ivan the Great, but man, that was all right, you know. Then jumped to 96 where Troy Pierce and Todd Crickey, man, I'll tell you, those two guys, I don't even have to say anything more about them two. I mean, as far as being first class, and I mean, if you finish second to them, you were doing good, you know. So I'm pretty proud of those seconds, you know. So.
Oh, they're still amazing finishes. So, John, I know when you came here, you were running the 650 Polaris's. About 1993-ish, we kicked the rules back to where you could only run a 600cc sled. You came in with, I believe, the Polaris XLT. Can you tell us the difference of handling the larger sleds to the little smaller weight motors?
Well, that was a real crucial year for our team. Because we had just won in 92 with the 650. So we were, you know, just like 88, we were thinking, well, man, we can just go back with that same sled that we just won with, probably put a new frog in the center. But we're thinking, boy, our chances could be good to go after that 25th anniversary, you know. And, well, then the rule changed, and that was fine, you know. But then the decision of what to do, riding Polaris, we knew the XLT was coming out, but a couple years prior to that, we got hooked up with Olaf Ayen, and in the planning stages for the 25th race, we're talking to Olaf, and he said he had over 1,000 hours on that new Polaris XLT motor, and he was very, very content to put that out on the racetrack. So, not my decision. It was Olaf Ayen's decision to go with that motor. And boy, the lighter XLT triple at that stage. And by the way, to my knowledge, there was only one other race team that went with the XLT motor. Everyone else went with the 650 sleeved down to a 600cc max.
Yes,
that's how the first year out they were mostly sleeved down. I can verify that coming through tech. We were miking cylinders and they were sleeved down. John, we were discussing earlier about some of the cold races here. You ran in the coldest races we had here, along with Scotty Masiak, who's sitting here. It was just a streak of a decade almost of just bitter cold. I was looking at that 93 race, the high for the day, the high reached 1 below 0.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know, Scott, John, if you remember seeing each other out there, could you see?
Well, I remember watching them go by me about every 20 laps. But it was a cold day.
I'll tell you, you know, the wind chill is something. So just, you know, my team and everything, we had come from a cross-country racing background where we did a lot, you know, more miles, you know, 200-mile lake races and that. But we had those deals on our handlebars to go over my gloves. You know, they're the
gauntlets.
Yeah.
Yes.
And boy, did that help. And then my dad, you know, crew chief, you know, John Wick Jr., whatever, he would always tape me up before the race so to not leave any exposed skin, you know.
Oh, you had to. And John, I know that you, in the 96 race, which we're going to kind of jump to, that was 25 years ago. That was the year of the big crash under the bridge. Thankfully, nobody was seriously injured in the long run. I remember, John, you stopping on the front straightaway right near where I was standing, trying to get the sleds stopped. Scotty Masiak was a little bit further into turn one, possibly on your side, actually.
I was face down, skidding down the track.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
And I remember, John, you coming up and pointing at your eyes and saying, I can't see. Was that the worst visibility you had ever seen here was the start of that 96 race?
Well, you know, between that and the 1985 race.
Yes.
That was horrible also. And I mean, that was our first year. So, you know, we had, you know, from that point on 85 race, we kind of decided we weren't going to race hard the first 100 laps, kind of let everything sort out. And, I think that helped us along the way.
Mm-hmm. That was very smart.
Oh, very smart.
You know, just able to have that little bit of safety, you know, being down on speed instead of running it to the hairy edge, and in case something happened in front of me or alongside of me or whatever, I was able to steer clear. And along those lines, you know, that's why we had those long seas too. And you know, if I had to go up on the bank, it was just like, you know, the sleds that I went out on that track with were just like a cross-country sled, you know, where you're riding the ditches and all that. So it was comfortable for me to go up on the bank or whatever, you know.
Sure.
Well, John, we're running out of time here, and I could listen to. I remember last year, all day. Your stories are so great and everything. We could do all 4 hours with you, because I think you could fill it with some fantastic stories. But I wanted to ask you before we let you go. We've been asking everybody, with the race not happening today, what are you doing today, John?
Well, I'm. We just had a basketball game with our two boys in the high school basketball, and we played one of our rivals and we got beat, so I'm a little bit sulking a little bit today, you know.
Okay, all right, we'll
get them more. But you know, I want to mention these two people that made an impact on me. Steve Brosco, you're one of them. Dan Burrow, Jan Bailey, Skid Row, Earl Kay, Don Sayer, the flagman. And then we had an old guy, Irv Shimon, that parked his motorhome on the hill. He attended every race.
Mr. I-500.
That's the I-500. And he kind of got to be a fan of ours, and we gave him a team jacket 1 year, and he wore that thing every year after that, you know. So kind of a shout-out to him. And another shout-out is to the Bozek family.
Yes.
John Bozek, Tom Bozek. I'll tell you, those guys are the greatest guys. We've had fun racing with them, being from Minnesota and all, and I know they haven't won yet, and you know, last year I did that pit road announcing with Matt Freer and Banky Robinson and everything, and boy, I was cheering on the Corey Davidson machine and the Bozek, you know, so, very good. But I just got to say, you know, that the quality of racers that race has attracted, you know, the Corey Davidsons that came after me, the Gabe Bunky, Troy DeWall, Ryan Spencer, Wes Selby, Aaron Christensen, Zach Herpendel. I mean, wow, what an awesome list of racers that have won that race and have been out there racing. So you guys got to be proud of that race out there. World-class Daytona 500 of snowmobile racing, for sure.
Well, we appreciate it, John. John, that's so great and everything, and we appreciate it. We look forward to seeing you next year here at the track when we actually get to run and do 500 miles here. But thanks for your time. Thanks for your stories, and we'll look forward to seeing you soon. Thanks so much for the time.
All right. Yep. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, John.
John Wick joining us here on the broadcast. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk to Dave Lorenz, the executive director of the Pure Michigan Campaign, next here on 1230 WSOL.
The big game is coming February 7th. This year's game will feature all the goodies you love on game day, including your favorite goodies from Northern Light Cannabis Company. They offer an array of high-quality flower, edibles, concentrates, and more at some of the most affordable prices in the state. Browse northernlightcannabis.com and then
should stop by. Open daily 9 till 9. This year's big game will be different with Northern Light Cannabis Company. M28 just west of I-75.
Keep out of reach of children. It's illegal to drive a motor vehicle under the influence of cannabis.
The last tractor you'll ever need is here. Get into a Massey Ferguson compact or utility tractor and accomplish more than ever before. These versatile tractors are known for their unbeatable power, smart fuel economy, and upgraded creature comforts. And with their ability to multitask through any job around the yard or farm, they'll provide you with outstanding value for years to come. Do all you need to do and more with Massey Ferguson compact and utility tractors. Visit Skinner's of Pickford to find the right model for your operation. The last tractor you'll ever need is here. Get into a Massey Ferguson compact or utility tractor and accomplish more than ever before. These versatile tractors are known for their unbeatable power, smart fuel economy, and upgraded creature comforts. And with their ability to multitask through any job around the yard or farm, they'll provide you with outstanding value for years to come. Do all you need to do and more with Massey Ferguson compact and utility tractors. Visit Skinner's of Pickford to find the right model for your operation. Now let's go back to the track on 1230 WSOO.
And we are back here at the I-500 track. Guys, look how beautiful it is. It would have been a great day to be calling a race. The sun is shining. It is gorgeous out there right now. It is cold, too. It is a pure Michigan day. And that's my segue to bring in Dave Lorenz, the executive director of Pure Michigan. Good morning, Dave. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing fine, actually. I'm in downtown Grand Haven right now. I sure do wish I was in the zoo right now. But it's a beautiful day over here, too. It's, 16 degrees. I think it's minus 2 wind chill. Just got done with a little run on the downtown streets. We have a snow melt system here, so it's handy on days like today.
We were actually saying we needed to get somebody to run a lap around this track, and if you had been here, we would have actually sent you out to do that. It sounds like you would have been a perfect...
I would have loved to have done that. I would have had to wear some kind of spikes or something, because as you know, I've so enjoyed being at the I-500, watching those guys go around that icy track, and mm-hmm. I'm always so impressed to see that, especially the nighttime races are super exciting and a lot of fun. So I'm really missing it this year.
Today, I think you would have needed snowshoes.
Yes. I don't think your spikes would have reached the ground.
Your spikes would have made it through. We got quite a bit of snow over the past couple of days.
It looks like a field.
Yeah. it's pretty crazy.
Same thing here. Yeah. Well, you know, we've been hoping for snow all winter long, and the meteorologists were telling us, hey, don't worry, we're going to get a lot of snow all over the state eventually. And the good thing is, a lot of this snow is being sucked off the lakes on lake effect snow, and so that's going to bring our lake levels down. A lot of that water will stay in our ground and such, so it's all good.
So obviously, we talked earlier, we've been talking all day about how COVID has affected things. We talked to Mayor Don Gehry earlier today about the effects of COVID on the city, and obviously this I-500 thing. Statewide, obviously, I mean, we're all coming up on a year. All the events, I would say, for the most part, have been postponed or canceled over the past year. How has this affected the Pure Michigan campaign over the past 11, 12 months, Dave?
I think it's just brought a new focus on the importance of the campaign first. You know, we all know the devastating effects of COVID, of course, not only to our health, but to our businesses. And the way we've been forced to, you know, shut down businesses, to keep each other safe, make all these changes to our lifestyles, that's been so difficult. But many, many of our businesses haven't been able to make it. Others are struggling big time. That means we're not having as many people work as we normally would. And I think there's going to be a bigger appreciation for what people in the travel and tourism world do for, you know, just basically to make our lives better. It is a big part of our life. If you think about it, you look at your town, the travel and tourism businesses are in reality the heart and soul of your communities, the retailers, the restaurants, the attractions, the cool things that people like to do, just simply the opportunity to get out and enjoy the scenery, to watch the ships go by in the locks. I mean, that is all travel and tourism. And even though people may not say, gee, I appreciate this sector of our economy more than I did in the past, I think internally we all will. And that means what we do with Travel Michigan, with the Pure Michigan brand, with what Linda Hope does and her team, with Sault Ste. Marie's Convention Visitors Bureau, and all those other travel marketers around the state, I just hope that there really is a better appreciation for what we do. Yes, we encourage people to have a good time, but we're part of the economic development system for our communities. And I think we're going to get behind it and support each other a little bit more.
Yeah, it's. I mean, obviously, you mentioned the restaurants and hotels and all those different organizations and businesses that have probably been more affected by this than perhaps any other industry in the state and everything. What's as we look forward to the rest of 2021 and into 2022? What's the forecast? Are we going to be able to get back to normal at some point, do you think?
Yeah, I've been looking at all the research that we have available, and I guess since nobody really knows how long it's going to take to get the vaccines out, how effective will eventually be at what time, I mean, I have a pretty positive outlook. I think by the end of May, we're going to be, pretty much getting back to normal with our activities and still, taking the Pure Michigan Pledge, keeping each other safe by keeping our masks on and keeping our hands clean and distancing and staying home when we're sick and all that. But, I don't have a crystal ball to figure that out. I just think mostly that we're gonna make that transition quickly. I will tell you that the research that I pay closest attention to comes out of companies that do what they call sentiment research. In other words, they talk to people around the country and they just ask them how they feel about things. And then over time, we've been able to see that sentiment slowly improving. And since the vaccines have started to get out, that intent to travel and that positive sentiment has grown dramatically. So, they do these kind of word clouds and so they ask people one word, what's the one word that most describe how you feel now? And just a few months ago, that word was frightened, scared, mad, words like this. And now those words are starting to change. People are starting to say excited, hopeful. As the sentiment changes, as people's perception about things change, so do their actions. And so that means people will start to travel. And I also think they're going to travel safely. And that's what I'm hoping for as we move forward.
Absolutely. Well, I know that as we wrap up here, one time we talked about, the possibility of bringing the spokesman for Pure Michigan, Tim Allen, up. We would love to have Tim come up for next year's race if you can make it happen,
Yeah, I'm sure he'd love to be there as well. He's a real gearhead, and he loves racing. He actually told me a little while ago he used to race for Ford, which was a new thing. I didn't realize that. So he's big time into racing, and his friend Jay Leno is the same way. So it'd be fun to have them both up there.
We would make sure that we had room in the broadcast for both if they decided to come.
Yeah, that you would.
But we definitely.
The thing is, Tim, as I've told you before, is truly just a normal guy, super successful, as funny as you would hope, smarter than you would ever expect. I mean, he's quite a talent, quite a stand-up comedian. He's just a great guy, and I really do hope he can make it up there one of these days.
Absolutely. Well, Dave, we appreciate the time, everything that you and Linda Hoth and everybody associated with Pure Michigan does for Sault Ste. Marie and the region, and we'll look forward to seeing you next. Hopefully see you before that, but if not, we'll definitely see you at next year's race for sure.
I will guarantee you that we'll see each other before next year's race.
Absolutely. Perfect.
Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Me too, Dave. Thanks so much for the time. Have a great weekend.
Hey, take it easy.
All right, Dave Lorenz from the Pure Michigan Campaign joining us here. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk with 1994 winner Ivan Hansen next on 1230 WSOL.
Since 1916, a lot of independent agents have recommended auto owners insurance, and a lot of parents have taken that recommendation to heart. So have a lot of their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. As we celebrate our first 100 years, Auto Owners Insurance thanks all those who have put their trust in us and all the generations who will.
Visit Madigan Pingator Insurance Services today on Water Street in Sault, Michigan, or at MadiganPingator.com.
It's 2021, and Green Metals in Dafter, your honest, main source, one-stop metal recycling business serving northern Michigan, hopes everyone has a prosperous year. If you need a few extra dollars to help with your heating bills or that trip you may want to take to the warm state of Hawaii, bring Green Metals your unwanted scrap metals, and they'll print you a check. Green Metals is paying top dollar for whole scrap vehicles. They also buy heavy equipment, catalytic converters, radiators,
radiators, batteries, rims, and motors. Reed Metals will give you an honest price without surprise fees or deductions at the scale. Bring in copper, brass, lead, tin, cast, aluminum, steel, and many more types of recyclable metals, and they'll print you a check with your name on it. Reed Metals is your honest, one-stop metal recycling business. They also offer roll-off dumpster service. Reed Metals is open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visit reedmetals.com or call 906-632-0018. Bring it in or have it hauled, and Reed Metals will print you a check with your name on it. Reed Metals, 10 miles south of the Sioux on Mackinac Trail. Now let's go back to the track on 1230 WSOO.
And we're back at the I-500 track, and we are joined by a 1994 winner, Ivan Hansen, who's on the phone with us. Good morning, Ivan. How are you today?
Good morning. Doing good.
Hi from Scott and Steve.
Scott, Mark. Steve, and Mark here. We're at the I-500 track. We're the only three people here.
We are. It's totally empty.
Yeah.
There's nobody here.
We're missing you for
That's
sure,
a sad
Ivan.
Day. It's a sad day, but it is what it is, and we'll get better at it next year.
Absolutely.
Ivan, we were talking a little bit before to John Wick. I don't know if you were. Hopefully you were tuned in. He talked about coming in second place to you in 94, which he thought was quite an accomplishment after the year you had in 1994. Can you briefly tell us how that season went, and along with winning the I-500, what other awards you had won that year?
Yeah, 94, really it got all started in 93. We had a real good sled. We won the championship in our first race in 93. And led us into 94, and we did a few different things to the sled and had some more trick deals out. We were running a two-brake setup, drive shaft and jack shaft, and it really did help us that whole season to accomplish what we did. We came into the first race in Marquette. It was a short race. I think only a 200-lapper. But the sled had been testing for a week in Minnesota to figure out that brake system. And the thing really came to life. A good friend, Jimmy Hedlund, had a whole lot to do with that. That day we burned up our new engine, and he pieced together a couple of used engines, and we come out and won that race. But I think we had a 7-lap lead on a 200-lap race on that one. And we went to Muskegon, and that race got canceled. They had a little tragedy there, or a big tragedy, but we moved on. And out to Drummond Island, that was part of that Triple Crown, and we won that race. We had a real nice day with the sled there. We needed a lot of brakes. Scott, you were in that race.
Yep.
It was just in a gravel pit with a tight turn. And took a lot of brake to be fast.
Yeah, you were out braking the rest of us going down into three for sure.
Yeah, it was. And the thing came to life. That sled was just unbelievable to drive. It was just a player. All you really had to do was set on it and pull the trigger, and it did what it wanted to. Of course,
yeah,
it kind of became one with it.
It wasn't you, was it?
Well, I did hold it wide open, and I'll get to that story, too, at the Sioux. But, so then I think we went to Cedarville, and we had some bad cold weather, like a day like today, but no wind. So I think that deal got shortened up in a different version. And
yep, we
then we landed at the Sioux, and the Sioux was the last leg of that Triple Crown that year. And, we got to that race. Well, that race, we did have a lot of little situations that somehow came through in our favor, but they could have really ended our day quick. And we started the race with brand-new high packs. We didn't like how they were wearing. We put brand-new on. Didn't have any time on them. The sled started slowing down at the first, 10 miles. And then it just slowly kind of kept pace, and it was a hard race. There was a lot of good sleds, a lot of Pro 5 sleds there, and we were in and out of the lead kind of all day long. I don't know if we touched the lead until 100-some miles, but we'd be in it for a while and out of it for a while, and in it, but right there all day. When we talk about, the joke is, guys laying back and coming on strong later. Boy, I don't know. I was wide open all day.
Well, you're talking about going out there. You said Rob Sass, who's been around here for years, driving with Terry Spencer on an Articat. You kind of teamed up with Rob Sass on your team that year. Tell us how that came together.
Well, I think it just came together just prior to the Sioux. I don't know. The first race I was with Marquette, I think Gary Lumpson was with, and I don't know in Muskegon who was with me there, but maybe SAS, but that got canceled early there. Even Drummond Island right now, I can't remember who was riding that day with me.
I think you wrote that by yourself.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, well, it probably did, but we got hooked up anyway with SAS because we knew we needed to get some help. But he went out. Every time he was out, he was doing a super job just maintaining laps, you know, putting the laps down. He's very well-versed in the enduro business and stayed out of trouble, and that's exactly what we probably needed that day. And when I was on, it probably went a little quicker, but I wasn't afraid to hold her, you know, as we were talking about that wide open. Back to Jimmy Hedlund. He was there too. And, you know, we're about halfway through the race, and things are back and forth and up and down all around, and Jimmy, he comes around. He's always a one-liner, and to me, he looks up out of the corner of his eye, and he says, are you running wide open yet? And I'm not sure when you're supposed to go wide open or not, but I thought the green flag would have been pretty much wide open.
Well, tell us about what running wide open when your carburetors got stuff in the carburetor. Explain that a little bit.
Yeah, well, yeah, back in that day and that wind, we had a lot of little things that made us nervous. And, yeah, so late in the race, we were right there contending, and things didn't break. We were going to be right there. So we were switching drivers right late in the race. And sometimes guys would wrap that tether cord around their wrist, and we were doing that. We weren't clipping it on and off or whatever. And Rob got off the sled, pulled his glove off his hand to take the cord off to put on my arm. And as he pulled his glove off, unbeknownst to any of us, the little hand charcoal warmers that we use slipped out of his glove and fell down. You know, we didn't see it. Nobody seen it. I go out, it's yellow yet, and I couldn't get the sled to run. She was darkening and coughing and backfiring, and the guys paid attention and seen it, and we came right in. Again, back to Jimmy Hedlund, he saved our day. First thing in his head, he stuck his fingers. He's down in there, stuck his fingers in the carburetors, and out he came with that little, like, tea packet, you know, hand warmer. And he just shook his head, and I blasted out of there, and it wouldn't clear out. Well, we had followed the plug out. And I raced back in, and they were ready. New plug, bam, right in. And went out, cleared out. You know, maybe we were down a couple laps and got them back and maintaining it. And then, again, we had one more yellow, one more plow there around 80 miles. We had, and I couldn't see, my goggle was just starting to frost over. It was a cold day. I don't know if it got above zero or not. But
very
there,
cold
like
10
below.
Yes.
It was windy, which was a good thing. It kept the dust moving from us. But there were situations where we were in some dust, some heavy snow. But anyway, late there that I had to get a new, my goggle, because there's no way, or I could finish, but I'd have to look sideways and out of one eye, you know. And so I got off the sled, and it was yellow, and I told Rob, I hollered in his helmet, if we come back in two laps, I'm just getting new goggles and tape. Well, I'm in the trailer getting ready, and I can hear this screaming going on outside. And Bert Bassett, the owner of Pro 5, was pretty intent that, you know, we were going to lose the race if I wasn't back out on that sled. And he was chewing on my crew chief there, Mike Maddish. I could hear him discussing outside the trailer door quite loudly. And finally, I had to stick my head out and say, Bert, I'm going to get back on. I got to get goggles. And he stomped away, and he was a muttering and wasn't happy with us at that moment. But got back on the sled, and there was about 80 miles or so to go. John Wick was up a couple miles on us, we think, and got him back fairly quick. And the damn sled, though, we also went on to 14-inch carbide, and it was like on a rail track. And we could be wherever we wanted on that track. And everything was just, it came to life. And so the last 80 miles was fun, but even right down to the end at one point, you know, I had no idea where I was. I just kept making laps, you know, and I was so focused. I knew where every bump was, where to be on the throttle, where not, and just didn't pay attention to where other people were. Well, I took the checkered flag, didn't know I took it. And come around wide open yet, and everybody's fucking along, and I had no idea what's going on.
Why are people cheering for me?
Around. Yeah.
So, you know, you have your day. When it's your day, it's your day. But we did have a great year. We won I didn't win the Myra Championship. I got second runner up that year, but we did have a great year that year and a lot of fun. And so we miss being up there and doing what we do. And it seems like there was another little story to that too. Oh yeah, Wilbur Rowe. He was in charge of keeping my gear oil warm so he could add the gear oil. You know, sometimes that gear oil disappears. You don't know who that gear oil ghost is, but he does take away that gear oil. And Wilbur was keeping the oil warm. Well, he'd been holding it right in front of the heater, and it was, I think it was about as liquid as water. Well, they said he put he was just to put a squirt in, you know, and he didn't want to overload the chain case because you can blow them apart that way, too. God darn it, Jimmy had done again. He comes around at the end of the race. I couldn't figure out the last 50 miles. My boots kept slipping off the running board. But I was hanging on to your life. Jimmy came around at the end, and he come right around to the chain case. He grabbed the hold of me. We're not in the track yet. He says, I got to look at this chain case. Well, everything I looked with him, from my hip down, I was all oil. And the sled was all oil, the seat and the running board and everything. And we don't know how I stayed on, but he says that when Wilbur went to give it that squirt, he says, I think half the bottle. That thing was so liquid. So, you know, we're lucky for a lot of things that would have went wrong for us that we made the day.
Ivan, so many great stories and everything. We appreciate your time and everything with us. And, again, just like a lot of our drivers today, we could spend a whole hour listening to some of the great stories that you got. But we appreciate you taking the time and sharing some of them with here this morning.
Oh, there was one more. I got to get this guy because he called me this morning.
You got a minute.
Tag Wellman. We all remember Tag Wellman. And that, I don't know, he had some kind of a green monster. I don't know what it was. But he come out. He had broke down. And he had come out late in the race. And, of course, he's fired right up. He'd been broke down. Well, we'd been racing hard. I had my lines. I had everything was perfect. And I was right there, I don't know, 75 miles to go. He come charging out down pit road. And I seen him, you know, in the corner of my eye. And I thought, well, he's a good racer. He's going to check me. I mean, I charged down into turn three where I normally had been. And my brakes worked. And he didn't have any brakes. He piled into me, right into my leathers. And there's green paint on my leathers yet today and a dent in my running board. And when I turned left and looked at him, his helmet, my helmet, I don't know if it's clear, but he told me later, he said, man, the look in your eye, I didn't want to talk to you. He says, God, dang it, Ivan's winning this, and I damn near took the move. But anyway, we laugh about it today, and I know he's out there laughing right now, but he was fun. We had a lot of fun. So the experiences on the racetrack, people don't know, and you win a race and you don't know. Another one, I got second on an Arctic Cat. Davidson ended up winning that race, but he got home and they went to take the clutch off, and the clutch fell right off. Well, that's how close you are to winning, you know.
Right. Well, Ivan, thanks so much for the time, and we appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you and getting some more of those stories next year for the at the race. And we always enjoy when you come up and join us in the broadcast booth.
Yep. No, it's fun. We appreciate it.
All right. Ivan Hansen joining us here on the broadcast. We'll take a quick break. We'll join ABC News in progress. Then we're back with our last hour coming up here on 1230 WSOO.
This is Back to the Track on 1230 WSOO, Sault Ste. Marie. Now, here's ABC News.